You make a deal with Netflix and you don't have money that comes into you forever. You get paid and then money 20% more or 30% more, but that's it.
It didn't come natural to me. There's so many things that I think about now I wish I had known when I was younger.
What I believe resonates with people who are particularly now is content that has some sort of meaning to it. It's more than just pure entertainment.
And so suddenly MTV was the only thing, it seemed, in the whole world, and all of Hollywood and everybody else was taking their cues from this startup.
I did not know a single writer when I became a writer. I think if you're trying to become a writer from someplace other than Los Angeles and New York, I still think that's really difficult.
Welcome to Hollywood Wolfpack with Kaya Alexander, featuring in-depth interviews and insights with professionals in the entertainment business. Get everything you need to navigate your above-the-line career right here. This podcast is often recorded live in front of Kaya students in the Entertainment Business School. You can find out more at entertainmentbusinessschool.com. Enjoy the show.
Hi, and welcome to the show. I am Kaya Alexander, your host, here today with my very wonderful special guest, Julia Pierpont. Julia, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm delighted to be here. You've done such extraordinary things with your blog. It's a real pleasure to join you and all the other wonderful guests you've had.
Thank you so much for being here. You know, Julia is a dear friend of my son's father. Stuart Volko is how we met. He was working on one of her movies like a number of years ago. So Julia, I would just love for you to share more about your work in the industry.
Okay, well, my goodness, how much do you want to know? I'm one of the, I guess I'd have to say, in a sense, a survivors, because I've been doing this for a number of years and done wonderful movies, you know, like Battle in Seattle with Charlize Theron and Channing Tatum and Woody Harrelson and Michelle Rodriguez, and then another wonderful film, Good, starring Viggo Mortensen, and over the years, really focused on doing projects that I thought could contribute something to kind of the pool of ideas or the kind of collective and conscious and unconscious conversation that is going on around the world about who we are as people and what makes us tick and how to evolve and how to improve. And each of those stories deals with ethical, moral themes. They're generally based on true stories that have kind of served pivotal moment in histories. One was a World War II story with Good, with Viggo Mortensen, about how the kind of insidiousness of evil, the slippery slope that we have and can slide down without realizing it, much as we saw in recent elections, and how the kind of tone of the American public changed over time in a way that was frustrating and sad to see, when we've kind of been a banner for, you know, how countries can comport themselves in a better, more inclusive way. So I try to do stories that have some impact in that way. And maybe they're just fun stories. Some, I've also done Christmas movies and things like that. So I want to do movies that can inspire and raise people's spirits, especially during COVID and post-COVID. I focused on films that were more uplifting, because certainly we needed it. And I think we still do.
Yes, I definitely do. I think so many of us do. I know that in COVID, a lot of, like, you know, agitated thrillers and everything were really popular, but I was on the other side going, I just need, like, somewhere to go for sanctuary.
Something happy. What about a sweet story? And I don't mean dumbing it down. I mean literally being authentically kind and, you know, those unsung hero stories about amazing people who are who are spending their lives in service to others and doing extraordinary things or extraordinary accomplishments, whether it's scaling a mountain, you know, if they're impaired in some way or challenged in some way and have to bring other resources to bear. I love those stories. I just think they are so inspiring and aspirational, and I love being a part of those. So if I can fit them into my productions, I certainly will do so.
Oh, I just love that. I love that about you. As a woman in film myself, I'm always looking at our representation on screen. I'm a very adventurous girl. I love surfing. I love mountain climbing, you know, and I'm always like, where are the others? You know, so I connect to you, but also as a fellow producer, because I'm newly producing, I have a new feature that we're taking out about Charles Ponzi, which is another cautionary tale.
Yes.
Sorry. So I know I've got a lot that I could learn from you as a producer. How do you find your projects? Because you sound like you have a real clear sense of who you are and what you love.
Well, it's odd because, you know, I came from a really different background. I was originally a biochemist and I was a pre-med. So I was studying to become a doctor. I wanted to be a brain surgeon and I had my path all mapped out. And then just for fun, I went to the Sorbonne for a summer program in film. And it was like a coup de foudre, as they say in France. It just hit me like a bolt of lightning. Yeah. And the French have such a deep and analytical and sort of symbolic way of looking at films and understanding them and making them that it just was so cool to see all of the different symbology and all of the different things that you could bring into a medium like film that, you know, you wouldn't have in a novel or a song. Or it's a medium that brings all of those different elements together in a really powerful way. And I had never heard it described the way, like André Bazin, the famous film critic, the way that the French approached it. And that sort of blew the lid off. And then I came back to Hollywood and studied the Hollywood way and went to the American Film Institute for some studies and NYU for some film studies, and really tried to get different approaches to it that could give me a language, an understanding of the language that I could bring to bear as a director, a writer, as a producer. I do all of those things. So it was really terrific. So finding stories, people send me a lot of things, which is great because I've been in the business for 20 years. So I get great projects coming my way. I have a reputation for getting them done and for doing them, you know, honestly, honorably, not ripping people off, which is, you know, in any business you have to worry about. But in the film industry, where there's a lot of money flying around and a lot of people from who knows where reinventing themselves, you never quite know what you're getting. So it's good to have a sort of known or reputable quality. And then I write. So I also find ideas that just come out of the ether that I love, that I want to write a script about. A friend of mine approached me recently about a really extraordinary story that's kind of an Erin Brockovich story about the dental industry. It's really shocking what goes on in runaway corporations that don't have enough oversight.
They're like making dental tools?
No, that are literally abusing low-income immigrant populations and scamming millions and millions of dollars from the government.
So
that's a big expose that is coming up. The script is almost done. We're planning on shooting that next year. And it's just, you know, and these are real insider. The FBI is involved. It's a whole big case. And, you know, we have to kind of watch what we're saying when we're saying it because of the FBI case. But that's a real eye-opener. So I do, you know, I think those kind of stories are really important to do. And Timothy Martinez, a really wonderful man involved in that industry, is kind of a whistleblower. So bringing that to my attention. And then as you say about women, I want more women on the screen. I want more minorities on the screen. I always do diversity casting. I think that's really important. I did a film about a Chinese man with autism running for president of the United States.
Oh my gosh, shut up.
So that's called Lead the Way, and that's out there. I want to use film to change the world that we live in for the better, but I don't want to do, you know, heavy-handed message movies. I want to integrate them authentically into a story that's already compelling and interesting. So that's kind of how I approach it. But, you know, love to see interesting things from other people. And then, you know, some I write. So, and some I direct. The ones I'm really passionate about are the ones that kind of land on my plate and like, hey, let's go. I had an opportunity to direct a Lifetime movie, which I kind of never thought I would do because I, you know, it's a demographic about, you know, thrillers and Christmas movies and things like that. And then during COVID, my whole perspective shifted and I realized we needed, you know, happy stories. So I did a Christmas movie for Lifetime and I did a thriller for Lifetime and it ended up being number one for like 3 months or something, which was surprising. You never know.
Do you have a preference as to what you love the most between your writing, producing, and directing?
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Well, writing is the most introspective, and you, of course, can do it alone. So I can sit under a tree and work on my laptop or write longhand sometimes. And I love that. That's a really interesting process. And I've started writing novels, too. So
I'm a novelist.
Oh, how fabulous. Okay, we're going to have to exchange stories. I love that. That might be my top priority at the moment. Obviously, I love directing. I'm passionate about it. You can really express your vision. It, you know, start to finish the project, really, you put your stamp on the project. Producing is a really fun way, more in some ways to, yes, get a story out there, but help other people fulfill their vision. So it, you know, it really just comes down to how powerfully something speaks to me, really, at any given time. But I have to say the writing is kind of speaking to me more at the moment.
What advice do you have for women in film who are aspiring toward above-the-line positions?
I would say the best thing you can possibly do is try to control your own path. And to do that, if you can cultivate financing sources, if you have friends or, you know, a group of doctors or dentists or
CEOs. Yes, I always say that. The doctors and dentists can be a little bored and sometimes they're sitting on a pile of cash.
Absolutely. And they might have their own interesting stories, as I mentioned. So you definitely want to explore that. And of course, CEOs or high net worth individuals, you know, if you know someone who knows someone, that is the probably easiest path to above the line producing is to bring in money.
Bring in financing, yes.
If you're successful at that, if you want to go a slightly longer route, you would learn line producing and you would learn how to bring projects in on time and on budget. And if you can show that you are successful at that, then you'll be bumped up to, you know, associate producer and then producer. So that's an alternate path where you just prove yourself. And that's a great way to do it if you don't have financing sources. Or make a fabulous, scrappy little short as a director. And it attracts people's attention, or you do a TikTok that attracts people's attention. Nowadays, there's so many options for short form that really bringing the eyeballs. And once you get the attention, whether it's of an agent or it's a studio or it's somebody who does have resources, might reach out to you and say, hey, I love your ideas. What if we made that short into a movie? That happens. That actually happens. So finding an agent can be a full-time job. So, you know, you definitely want to be out there making things rather than puttering around trying to find an agent, I think. And the agent will look for things, will look for at your material anyway. So you want to, you know, if you have a little bit of cash, try to do a short. If you have no money, get some friends to help you for free and do a TikTok or something like that. That just shows that you're clever and you have ideas and you have a different vision and perspective. That will really help you. And you use that as a calling card. You can send it out with your resume to studios, to companies, to directors you love, to producers you love, just to kind of get it out there. And of course, on your, you know, your Instagram and your Facebook and all your sources so they can find you.
Yeah. Yes. So the show is called Hollywood Wolf Pack because I'm always advising my students, find your wolf pack. So I ask my guests, who is in your wolf pack? How did you find your wolf pack of those who you love working with again and again in your movies?
Oh, God. I am so blessed, I have to say. I have extraordinary people. Some of them investors. Some of them are producing partners. Evelyn Hsu is one of my dearest friends who is an extraordinary producer. And I just did a fabulous Chinese American film about with her Hollywood movie about a very famous Chinese artist named Zhu Lanxiao. And she's one of the most famous female artists in China from the 1930s and 40s in Shanghai, and a beautiful, talented, extraordinary woman, not just as an artist, but as a poet and an ambassador of culture for China. And you know, extraordinary, brave woman who had a very tumultuous, in many ways tragic life, but in many ways triumphant life. So that's a beautiful movie, a docudrama. It's really more of a drama. And that'll be out next year. We're almost finished with the edit.
Oh my gosh, congratulations.
Thank you. Richard Anderson is another dear friend of mine. He's a wonderful, won an Academy Award for his extraordinary work in sound design for Indiana Jones and many, many other big movies. And he's now directing, and I'm working with him to put his movies out there, to produce for him to direct. And that's really fun. We're doing a cool creature feature called Danger Island. That's, you know, sort of Loch Ness-y, you know, dinosaur-y. It's a cool story with a little ecological twist to it.
Oh, so many of my students just love that. That'll be so fun to share.
Yeah. Yeah. And creature features do well in every market around the world. So it's a fun way to kind of start building up your portfolio. It's a fun genre to experiment with. And we'll shoot that somewhere where it's inexpensive, like Mexico or Thailand, where you can get two or three times the value for your budget.
Absolutely.
You know, and they have great jungles and fun places like that, and ruins and things. So great production value. So those are the kind of people, you know, Arthur Sarkissian, who is a wonderful producer, very talented, creative producer. He really understands story. He's driven by the heart, but also is, you know, a brilliant producer. He did all of Jackie Chan's Rush Hour series.
Oh, sure.
And Sandra Bullock's While You Were Sleeping. And he just really understands story and what will touch people, what will move people. Some producers are real nuts and bolts, and some producers really are much more than that. They're creative and they understand casting and story. And he's one of those, and a dear person. You know, you'd think a big mucky muck like that could be, you know, might be, you know, a jerk like so many are, but not a bit of it, just a real prince and a class act. So those, I would say, are my core wolf pack. James Chow is another wonderful person who's just getting involved in the film industry who came to me with a fabulous story I fell madly in love with called Tenor by Night that is just aspirational, inspirational about being able, even at 50, being able to fulfill your dreams. And I think that is such a universal theme. And our population is actually aging, that like 50 is the new 30. So
that speaks to me. I'm looking at my 50th birthday right now.
There you go, girl. Well, I'm older than you. I ain't saying how much.
But I just hit my stride, though. I feel like here I am. I've just hit my stride. I have a 12-year-old. I feel like I know who I am now. I know how to say yes or no to various things or people in my life. And I have my power now. I don't think I had it really before this stage in my life. And, you know, especially in our industry, which can be so ageist, it's like, oh, you should have your power and your taste and everything dialed by the time you're 25. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
That doesn't happen.
It does not happen. It's a myth.
Especially for women, because women in this industry tend to be channeled into acting. And when you're channeled into acting, they certainly, the powers that be, you know, agents and producers, and directors, et cetera, they don't want you necessarily to have your own power. They want you to follow their lead. And, you know, it's great for them to have a famous brand name compliant actress. And that isn't necessarily, of course, in the actress's best interest. So I hear you when you say you didn't have your power before. I didn't either. I mean, I'm doing more now than I was doing when I was in my 30s, where it was a real struggle to get, you know, to be taken seriously as a producer or director. You know, they don't channel women into director slots. You have to fight for those. And even as writers, you know, you can write on your own, but getting accepted, getting a studio project as a writer, all of those things can be more complicated. But, you know, producers can make their own career path happen. Writers and directors have a harder time of it, especially as women and minorities. So we got to fight harder. And you're doing the right thing by having these other things out there, the blogs out there, which help you establish a much wider reach for the ideas you already have. So that's really cool.
I feel so blessed because I get to see my students coming up in the industry, and many of them are in their 20s or 30s, a lot of BIPOC, LGBTQ, like I am as well, bi and queer. And I was a development exec in 2005, 2006, 2007. So I have seen the industry change, because back then I was literally the only woman in almost every meeting that I was in, any pitch meeting, anyone who was coming into the office, it was pretty much just me. And I was definitely the only queer person in any of those spaces. And I know that
hallelujah,
we haven't made the progress I would hope for at this point, but I look back and I go, look at where we are now, almost 20 years later. It's so much better that we can even have these conversations now in a way that we couldn't then. So I feel like progress is slow, but at the same time, I'm grateful for the progress that we are having.
It's huge. And, you know, Hollywood, for all that at some, it moves quickly, it also evolves slowly. And what's remarkable is just in the last 10 years, the transformation is extraordinary. And the Me Too movement had a huge impact on that. Black Lives Matter movement had a huge impact on that. It really went through a kind of ethical, moral, spiritual awakening where they were like, oh my God. And part of it is because women in the Me Too movement were just not taking it anymore. They were suing their asses. They were going after these predators who were, you know, assaulting them, damaging, rapes and assaults. I mean, come on, this was standard practice. The Harvey Weinsteins of the world, all of those people, they were commonplace.
Yeah, it wasn't just inequitable, it was dangerous. So this was not an industry that, you know, you would ever want your daughter to go into, for instance, to be like, oh, no, that's a different job.
Yes, like modeling. It's fraught with terrors and abuse and exploitation. And I think that the industry as a whole is extraordinary because, let's face it, Hollywood helps to shape culture all over the world.
I was just watching Guess Who's Coming to Dinner a couple of weeks ago, and like reminded, oh my God, we had not seen a biracial couple on screen like this until Sidney Poitier did this movie, and yep. like how transformative that was for the even the conversations amongst just the global culture of like, okay, what does this mean for us that we can expand our minds and our concepts of what's okay, you know, and be hopefully a little bit less racist going forward.
Well, I think that's always going to be an ongoing battle, and we just have to keep moving the line forward that's acceptable. And, yeah. you know, when you have a president, you know, a past president that was talking about shithole nations and, you know, which were people of color. And those are the kind of conversations that we need to fight against, and we need to stand our ground and say, no, we've evolved beyond that. We are all one people on this planet, and everybody has stories to contribute, and every culture has stories to contribute and ideas to bring to the main table.
I think a lot
of that with like China, for instance. China's extraordinary what they're doing. They, again, their film industry started from nothing in the 70s, didn't make a lot of progress until bam, 10 years ago. And now, you know, they have the largest market on the planet and some extraordinary movies coming down the pike. And
I love Farewell.
Oh, yeah. 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 Beautiful. So, you know, we just have to keep moving the line down the field, moving the ball down the field. And I think we're doing that. And, you know, women, minorities, are really taking the fore in that. Don't want to call it a battle anymore. I want to call it a progressive conversation, because I think we're winning. I think our movies are getting made. I think our stories are getting out there. And we just have to make sure that keeps increasing, not static.
Yeah.
And that part of that comes down to hiring female executives, hiring minority executives, so that the people who are making decisions about what stories and movies get made are representative of the various cultures that have stories to tell.
That is where the path will open so much better than it is right now, because those biases can be in place amongst the execs, in which case they're making decisions from a place of taste, but that also might be informed by bias, and that's not progressive or helping move the conversation forward culturally.
Yeah. And look, you know, our older white gentlemen might not have any exposure to stories beyond a certain kind of story that he's used to, or a family that he grew up in. And those, of course, are going to be more interesting to him because they resonate with him. But what we're finding is that there are themes that are universal. I mean, family is universal, and the craziness that goes on in families and how families react to that. And that's a beautiful, interesting story to see from different cultural perspectives, because we're all human, our emotional palette is the same. We feel the same emotions. But when you're born and raised in a village in Africa versus, you know, Westchester County in New York, or Louisiana or South America or Asia, all of those different cultural nuances inform how those families react. And that brings a beautiful, very specific authenticity to a universal story. And what we're seeing is that when you get specific, like Farewell, or like, you know, some of the other cultural stories we're seeing coming, when you get specific about a culture or a specific area, it doesn't turn people off. It draws them in.
And it's authentic.
It's authentic.
They're like, yeah, that's the human story. That's like me. Even though they're different, they're just like me. And it creates empathy. It creates global empathy.
Exactly. Which God got us, however you want to say it. We need that more than ever now. Because without global empathy, we could not have survived COVID.
Yes.
We literally needed each other to survive that. Unlike the Spanish flu, which took out so many, this could have escalated into something far, far, far more desperate. And it was already desperate. So We did that. We did that by bringing global empathy to the fore in a medical crisis. And I think we learned how to do that from movies, which exposed us, particularly ones like on Netflix, who were pioneer in subtitles and bringing in foreign stories with subtitles. And lo and behold, I'm probably being bored, sitting at home in lockdown, had a lot to do with it. People got used to other stories in other languages with and reading subtitles. And wow, the whole world opened up because, you know, the smaller ones, you can't afford to dub them or it wouldn't be as authentic. But if you're willing to kind of dive in with a subtitle and look at something that's taking place in Brazil or Egypt or, you know, Southeast Asia, suddenly the world is a much smaller place and we're all in it.
Yeah, we sure are. It's
sharing Mother Earth. I love that Gaia. Without her, we'd be nowhere.
Absolutely true. I love Brazil. You mentioned Brazil. And in the pandemic, I found Girls from Ipanema, which I hadn't seen and loved so much. It has all the bossa nova music. And, you know, it's so authentic, so beautiful, so rich, this incredible history and culture and set in the 50s and 60s there. And all about these women who are founding a club and working together. And, you know, I would not have discovered that were it not for Netflix, the pandemic, some time. So many of my favorite shows are international and I love them. Where I'm realizing, coming right up on the Oscars, this show is going to come out on the day of the Oscars. So we've got to talk about some of your favorite movies, Julia, that are up this year. What are you rooting
for? Well, I confess that because I was posting one and shooting two movies this year, that I haven't had a lot of time to delve into what's going on with the Oscars and who the favorites are and all of that. And, you know, obviously, I Barbie and Oppenheimer and, you know, those are, I think they move the needle in interesting ways and are very creative and, you know, explore. One is a cultural icon that one would never have associated with feminism and now is. So that's a huge triumph. That's a triumph in and of itself, is when you reframe a Mattel cultural icon that's always been a kind of a point of contention. And now, you know, it's more meeting of the minds. And Oppenheimer, certainly with the behind the scenes storytelling, was fascinating, and all the politics that went into that. Talk about a global crisis and having to confront it and figure out a way to work together against, obviously, anti-Semitism, anti-communism, and the fear on the political sphere of bringing brilliant minds, but from a different political spectrum, and what that might mean. And all of that was just fascinating in addition to the personal elements. So I won't speak more about the others because I just have been focused on doing my own movies.
I love that for you, that you've gotten to be focused on doing your own movies. I mean, that's living the dream right there. You'll have time to catch up on some of the Oscar winners and nominations in coming times. But I'm so happy that you're busy. That's the best news ever.
It's amazing news. And it all, you know, and as we know, Hollywood is ageist. But what's happened for me is all those years of being honest and honorable have now suddenly paid off, and I've been discovered, and people are bringing me projects and money. What's wrong with that? It's fabulous. So I just think, hey, and I take good care of them. So that's what you want to be able to say and get these wonderful stories out there. So yeah, I am absolutely extraordinarily blessed, and I'm just riding the wave. As you know very well, as a surfer,
indeed,
going
indeed.
With the flow and riding the waves. I just feel very zen about where I am, and I am accepting of what life has to offer and what I have to offer life. And I think it's a very powerful two-way street. We have to understand our own power, and we have to share it. And if we understand our own power, but we keep it to ourselves, number one, maybe we don't understand our own power, but number two, you're kind of hiding your light under a bushel basket. And I know that it can be scary to go out there and swing for the fences, but failure is a really good teacher. And so you either swing for the fences and you fail, or you swing for the fences and you succeed. And if you fail, you learn how to not do that the next time. So I see failure as a very useful tool. Like Thomas Edison, I think for him to create the filament, it took him something like 900 tries. That's a lot of failure for one success. But look at the success. It's just extraordinary to me. So don't be afraid to fail. Fail, fall down, get up, brush yourself off, do it again differently in a way that you think will be more successful. And if you fail again, fall down, get up, brush yourself off, figure out what could work better, and do it again. Just, it's all about the iterations and learning each time. You know, we are great, smart people who learn. So use that to your advantage, you know?
I asked my grandfather at the end of his life when he was 85, what advice do you have, you know, for us, for your grandchildren, for those to come? And he said, make all the mistakes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Perfect. Perfect. Exactly. Make them all. Learn from them and see what comes out of it. I mean, what's so interesting about failure is that a lot of the epic stories that we love, they're about failure.
Yeah.
And they teach us something. Yeah. So, hey, don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. It doesn't mean you are a failure. It means that approach was a failure. So it's your job to figure out a different approach.
To not take that personally.
Don't realize that. They take it very personally. And when, you know, they do this, you know, loser, failure, those are very destructive elements, I think. They don't help to move people forward because they're all about a kind of destruction of the personality, and put downs don't help people to succeed. I think they really hold you back. So I think it's important to make the distinction between failing at something and being a failure. I think it's hard to imagine any person on earth is an absolute failure. I find that impossible to believe because they do so many different things. So if something was successful, they're alive. That's a success in and of itself. So, you know, always something.
For sure. Oh my gosh, I agree with you. You know, failure is so painful. I've certainly had my own setbacks, as with my first novel, which, you know, had so many rejections before it finally found its publisher in HarperCollins. But the journey.
So did J.K. Rowling.
Well, no, I was not a J.K. Rowling story, though.
But she had a lot of failures before she succeeded.
She did. I wish she was a nicer human being. With all of the wonderful writing that she's done. Hey, look, if I could give you a magic wand with what you want to create or manifest or do going forward in your life and your career, what would you create? Anything that you would want?
Actually, I had a really interesting experience this past year. In addition to doing all these films, I actually went through a cancer bout. And it was very unexpected. And, you know, I was in the middle of a shoot and had a, and threw up, and that I don't do that normally. So I thought, okay, was this, you know, a bad taco or, and just because I'm very aware of my body, I did go to the emergency room and lo and behold, discovered a tumor. So I thought, okay, let's deal. And what I discovered dealing with that, and I'm, you know, 100% of remission, thank goodness.
Gosh.
So I'm very, very happy. But it was a journey. And what I discovered on that journey is that there weren't a lot of resources. There were kind of patient groups, but they were sort of siloed depending on what medical center you were with, there wasn't a real opportunity to kind of share those. And as I believe Stuart knows, I started in the whole media industry doing multimedia for healthcare, for Cedars-Sinai. I was doing cardiac, multimedia presentations to help patients understand it better. I've always really believed in understanding our health and empowering ourselves by being able to make informed decisions about our health. So one of the things that I'm going to do going forward is I'm going to do a cancer blog, and I'm going to share my experience. And I found that a lot of people plummet into depression and they don't know how to handle it. And once you're in depression, it's hard to get out. And it's also impacts on your cancer rate, because it unfortunately can help it come back when you're feeling that low. So I, being an optimist, have always approached things optimistically with a positive attitude, and that has really helped me. And I want to be able to share that in a way that can help other people, no matter what they're struggling with, whatever health issue, but I'll start with the one that I know the most about and kind of go from there and welcome their stories and kind of see where we can build this just wonderful thing. Because it
touching. I love that you took something so hard and you want to use it to give back. And that sounds like your orientation in life.
Thank you. It's hard. You go through that and it's very hard, and you automatically worry about dying and what's happening next and all that stuff. And if you don't have a support system, or you don't have friends or blogs even, or something you can turn to where other people are finding ways to deal with it in a more positive way, then you can be in real trouble. Yes. So I want to be of service in that way. And I can share my bad times too, because we all go through them. But I really am looking forward to this. So thank you for letting me share the upcoming news.
Well, you're going to have to give us the links.
The world premiere.
Yes. Everyone, you and I are both dog and cat lovers. Do you have pets around you who helped you get through it, or your beloved? Who's your beloveds in your home?
Very much so. I have Tika, who is a kind of a yellow lab mix. She's got something else in her that's a little more fierce, because she's also a good watchdog. She's wonderful. And then we have two cats. We have Mouse, who was named because she was such a tiny little gray calico and she looked like a mouse. And she's fabulous and a great, won't say inside, she goes in and out, but she's brilliant at avoiding coyotes and what have you.
Wow, that's scary, yeah.
But she's just phenomenal. She goes up every tree, she has her route beautifully planned. And then Gigi, who is a sweet little tabby who does stay inside because she's clueless. We adore her, and she's a fabulous lab cat, but absolutely can never go outside. So those are my darling pets, and I know it really makes a difference to have that kind of love around you. And I have to say, my husband, Michael Tiberi, is one of the nicest, most amazing human beings on the planet, and has helped me not just, in my film careers, work with me on various projects, but he really helped me through the cancer and was there for me every minute of the day. And brilliant. He's a laser physicist. So he does all the research and delves into all the different treatments and chemos and all of that stuff, and always has ideas. And it's just so supportive when, some guys would have bailed. Mm-hmm. So he just won a fabulous, he won the top award in the lighting industry. So he won his kind of Oscar for the top best innovator in lighting for his new systems, which are fabulous UV systems that actually can kill COVID and all other viruses and molds. And he's really focusing on food, because we lose about 30% of our crops to mold and mildew. And when we're dealing with a global famine, really a lot of global hunger, and there are famines all over the world in different countries, you need to be able to protect the crops you grow and prevent them from being destroyed. And his new system can do that. So he's working with AgriCanada and all these other, you know, big groups to make that happen. So I'm really proud of him.
It's just so
he sweet. Was partners with the guy who, academician, Nobel laureate, Basov, who won the Nobel Prize for inventing the laser. And that's my hubby's partner. So I'm really proud of him. He's passed now, Basov, but what an extraordinary opportunity.
What a wonderful innovation. So important.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I come from a family of farmers. So.
Oh, there you go. Wonderful. Well, then you know all about ergot on rye and yes. wheat and the mold that can just wipe out a whole silo of corn.
Right.
Like yeah. that. I mean, and boom, it's gone. So
here, you know, that's it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you. But farming salt of the earth, man.
For sure. real people, humble people.
Hands in the dirt. These hands. I grew up on a farm. My mother, she was more kind of a gentlewoman farmer, I would have to say, didn't come from farming. She was more, you know, on the kind of older family, the American older families, Mayflower, that whole thing. But she recognized the importance of putting your hands in the dirt
yes.
and raising your kids with, you know, cows and sheep and chickens and really understanding what it means to be part of the cycle of life. And it's a very powerful thing.
I think it makes us better writers.
Definitely better writers. I think it makes us better people.
Yeah, agreed.
Let's start there. Let's start there. And then writing comes with that. But not everybody has that opportunity. I recognize, you know, if you're living in a city, you can have potted plants and those can help you. You always need the oxygen in your space, but you can't really get out there and, you know, 40 acres and a mule ain't happening in your apartment in Manhattan. So you have to adapt.
Absolutely. We do. Julia, it's been so great to meet you. Thank you so much for being a special guest on the show. I can't wait for all your exciting updates. Congratulations on all this great news that you've brought us today that you've shared with us.
Well, I will let you know when they're out and ready to be seen. I'll send you links. And I really appreciate you, you know, taking the time to interview me. It's a wonderful honor. And I really, really appreciate it. And thank you for being so gracious and charming and as you are and really holding the banner for the rest of us.
Well, the pleasure's all mine.
Thanks for listening to Hollywood Wolfpack. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Please help our pack grow by sharing Hollywood Wolfpack with your friends and colleagues. Give us a rating and write us a review. Kaya loves hearing from you and reads them all. For more on Kaya and the Entertainment Business School, visit entertainmentbusinessleague.com. Until next week, remember, the strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack.